Live from the Barbie Dreamhouse and brought to you by Hasbro. Making the world smile. Hasbro. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2 Talk. Today is December 4th, 2010, and we are recording episode 12. And why don't we still have theme music, Allie?
Well, no, I actually had theme music, but then I got mugged.
Well, seeing your sans pocketbook now, can you at least share with us what you've been up to?
Well, been raiding, the usual. Seems like we're not really making forward progress, per se. We're doing some of the same content, but we're actually completing it. We're sort of at this point where we can't go to the next stage because we don't have the right classes, you know, for the sages.
So is that the encounter that you're stuck at?
That's one of them. And also we can't really try any hard mode stuff right now. The lair hard mode we could have tried, but we only had one tank that night, so wasn't really conducive to hard mode. And people are still getting pieces. I still need pants. I just got my breastplate last week, so it's not as if it's a wasted effort for people. So that's the rating. And I've been working on some quest stuff, still trying to get to 5,000 quests by the time the expansion comes out, which the time is narrowing rapidly. I did finally finish the 10-time repeatable from the butcher block, you know, the barrel quest. I can't remember the name of the quest line.
Circle of the Unseen Hands is the faction.
Yes. So I finished that, and I got the little armor set there, which was kind of cool. So that's what I'm wearing right now. And as you know, I got the drop from Unrest for the reinforced dwarven work boots. And I'm pretty sure they upped the drop rate on that. Would you agree?
I am very aware that you have that. I'm also very aware that our other questing partner has it as well. I'm not sure if it's actually possible to have the worst dice in the world, but I think I have them. I lost both rolls with, what, like single-digit numbers?
Yeah, you have pretty crappy dice.
It was disheartening, to say the least.
But it's a good sign that the starter dropped two nights in a row, so you never know. Maybe the next time we go, it'll drop for the Delmon.
I certainly hope so, because I'm running out of pillows to keep punching. But I agree with what you were saying about the drop rate. I do think it's been increased.
Hopefully you'll get that. But the other thing is that I was going to mention is, you know, normally I would be trade skilling away before the expansion to get those last levels of my higher level trade skillers done and maybe get a little more progress done on the lower ones, but they've been sort of sidelined due to all this other crap going on. But I did want to mention, I've got all kinds of people pestering me for arrows and poisons and stuff because I've been such a slacker, but I'm so annoyed by the lack of void warped wood that drops, that I have no excitement when I make arrows anymore. I'm very, very bummed. They need to increase the drop rate on the void warped wood.
See, now I think they have increased it because I've been reading the same content that you have, the Palace of Rowan Theer, talks, labs over and over again. And I seem to be seeing it drop more often. Maybe I'm more conscious of it, or maybe I'm paying attention to it more. But for some reason, there does seem to be an increased amount of it. Maybe I'm just imagining it. I have no hard data to say one way or the other, but my perception is that it seems to be more common than it used to be.
I agree. My perception is the same, but it's still not high enough. I mean, I'm seeing maybe one, maybe two a night that I raid. And we how does your guild handle those? Our guild randoms them to whoever can use the product. Well, if I'm the only ranger, but anyway, I'm rolling against people who use other things, and it irks me when I don't get it. Because I have to buy my DPS, damn it. And other classes don't, and I'm still bitter about that.
Okay. To answer your question, how my guild handles it, I don't know, to be honest. I believe the officers loot it and give it to those who can make something out of it. To be honest, as a class that can't make anything out of it, I don't know what happens to it, and I guess from my point of view, I really don't care what happens to it. I can't leverage it. I can't make anything with it. So to me, it's just another drop.
Do you have a ranger in your raiding party?
No.
Well, then it probably is irrelevant.
Are void arrows the only thing that are that you can make out of it, or are the only thing that are of worth any value to be made out of them?
Spirit-blessed arrows is the outcome. There are three types of arrows. I have no idea if it makes anything else. I'm fairly certain it's just the arrows.
Okay, like I said, I don't know what's happening to it. Maybe I should find out. I sound like a slacker because I don't know what's going on with them.
Well, that shouldn't be too much of a surprise. Well,
thanks. Thanks for that vote of confidence.
I'm sorry. I'm just bitter.
You do sound bitter today.
I'm sorry.
You're not in the holiday spirit yet.
Oh, please. You know, one of my favorite things to say in Frostfell is, Merry effing Frostfell.
Okay. Maybe we'll leave that topic for another show where we could do a whole Frostfell show with Allie. Maybe we should find somebody to stand in.
You know, actually at work someone called me a Scrooge the other day. Seriously. I'm a grouch. Just call me Oscar.
Should I share what I've been up to, Oscar?
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Del. Tell us what you've been up to, Del.
Well, I'm not going to say that I've been continuing to raid the same content, because I've been saying that for the past few episodes. So what have I done? I got Delmon to 450 alcohol tolerance.
Woohoo! Nice.
Don't know why, but I did it.
It was there.
It was there. It's like the bear going over the mountain. I wanted to see what would happen when you get the 450 alcohol tolerance. I'll tell you, nothing. The bar goes all the way to the right.
What's the bear going over the mountain?
To see what he could see.
What is that?
It's a little children's nursery rhyme, isn't it?
I don't know.
All right, we're going to have to Google that later then, because I swear it's a children's song.
I believe you.
That probably the Grouch doesn't get, because that sounds like fun. So how did I do that? I went into my house. I paid my rent, if you can believe it, Allie. Paid my rent, went in, clicked on the party keg, got intoxicated, and then I started zoning. Because I believe you actually get alcohol tolerance skill ups every time the alcohol effect is applied to your character. So you can get it when you first take a drink, or every time you zone, the effect is reapplied to your character, and therefore you can have the potential to get a skill up. So what I was doing was I would get drunk in my house, zone out into South Kinos, zone over to Kinos Harbor, and then for some reason, I was zoning back and forth between Kinos Harbor and Nektalos Forest. Don't know why I was doing that. I was just doing it. And then as I was finishing it up, I clicked one more time, and I unlocked the Ding-a-Ling achievement. I didn't know there was an achievement for this, but apparently you can get an achievement for taking the bells 500 times.
That's really sad.
Sad that I unlocked it, or sad that it exists?
I think it's sad that you unlocked it without knowing that it existed. Because that means you actually clicked on the bell for another reason. 500 times.
Well, it does get you around, right?
500 times?
Well, I don't think I did it 500 times to increase my drunk rate. I was just doing it as a way to zone to apply the drunken stupor effect to me every time, the tipsy or inebriated or very tipsy effect on me.
To get your alcohol tolerance skill ups.
So talk about getting more bang for your buck. I was able to get both alcohol tolerance skill ups and unlock an achievement at the same time.
Well, congrats on that.
Thank you.
So while I've been raiding and trying to find wood, You've been drinking and clicking bells.
Yes. I've been getting drunk and playing with my ding-a-ling.
Okay.
Emails now?
Let's move on.
All right, we got two emails between last show and this show. Would you like me to go first, Allie, while you recover from that one?
That's a good idea.
Okay. So the first email that we received was from Tarvos on the Befallen soon-to-be Oasis server. And what Tarvos writes is, "Greetings all. I have been listening to the podcasts that you have been doing and find them very interesting. Having played EQ2 almost since launch and EQ4 several years before that with my fiance, we still love the game and are fascinated by some of the things that we find. We each have our main characters, Monk and a Druid, that are 81, but since we usually only duo, we don't see raid content or even some of the group content. We don't complain about this since we enjoy doing what we do, and my job occasionally requires that we take breaks from playing that make being in a guild or regular groups problematic. We love the low end of the game and often make new characters that we will play for a little while, never to a specific level, and then abandon them and start over. We often do this with new expansions or at times when new content is introduced for the beginning of the game. As a result, we have made new characters in Frostfang Sea, so your report on the noobs is very interesting because we are at the Crag Spine section now. The reason we are there now is that my fiance had her account hacked and most of her tunes and stuff are gone, as well as some of the stuff for the guild that we run slash own. Yes, we started one a while back, and now our characters are the only ones left in it, so we had to restart our Hallis tunes. I do have a couple of questions about the podcast, though. Unless I am seriously mistaken, and I don't think that I am, there are several episodes missing. I subscribed to the podcast on iTunes, and not all of the episodes show up. I then went to look on the site and I find the same issues, that there are some gaps in what is posted. Any chance of getting those episodes posted at some point? All in all, I really enjoy the podcast and hope you two keep up the great work. Signed, Tarvos, the 81 monk of Dominant Knights on the Befallen server, soon to be Oasis, in Kanan, the level 15 warrior." And I appreciate how he gave me a pronunciation of how to say Kanan. Thank you for taking time to write to us. Great email. A quick answer to the question about missing episodes. Yes, episode 8 is still unpublished. We are still waiting to get the recording of that we did with a crossover podcast. And as soon as we do get that, we will get that posted. To my knowledge, though, that is the only one that is missing. So if you are seeing things or not seeing things that you think should be up there, let me know specifically. We can take a look into that. But as far as I know, both the website and iTunes should be updated completely with everything from episode 0 to 11 minus episode 8.
Don't tell them about episode 0.
Oh, but episode 0 was a lot of fun.
It was practice. It shouldn't even have been published.
Oh, fiddlesticks.
If it was a Templar joke, you wouldn't be saying that.
This is true. But then again, Templars are not jokes.
Moving on. I did actually have a comment on the last email. He did say that his fiance had her account hacked and most of her stuff is gone and some of the guild stuff. You can put in a petition for that and you just have to verify your identity. You can get your items back. I would hate to see a level 81 or high level character lose all their stuff and re-roll. It's worth a petition.
Right, that's been a problem with a whole bunch of folks and a few that we know personally as well, where accounts have been hacked and stuff's been taken. And I think usually just filing a petition takes them a little while to straighten it out and make sure what all was missing from when. But they have had a good record of, I think, getting that stuff corrected for folks.
Yeah, they're really good about it. It just, they have to go through the process to verify your identity. But once they do that, they're really good about getting your stuff back. So worth looking into, I think. So thank you, Tarvos, for that email. We have another email from a regular listener, Indebuff. Hi, guys. Okay, I feel I really need to clear something up. I never intended to give the impression that constructive input in forums was a bad thing. I also do think that if content is placed in the game, it should work, and therefore bringing broken content to the attention of the devs in the forum is not an issue. I sometimes get passionate about things that get under my skin, and so I can get on a little bit of a rant. If I gave the wrong impression, then I am sorry. Let me try to clarify. But I did want to pause here for a second and also clarify something. We sometimes take an idea to the extreme, and it just so happened that your email, your topic, was an excellent point of discussion. For the sake of argument, taking it to the extreme, taking it to the next level that you never necessarily would go to. You know, it's a great topic of conversation and gets people thinking about things. So we certainly didn't mean to put words in your mouth. So anyway, moving back to the letter, there is constructive criticism and destructive criticism. Constructive being, oh, SOE, that new quest line you added seems broken when I do this, etc. Or, I had a really cool idea for something new for our houses. Destructive. SOE, why is it you can't get anything right? I pay $15 a month and I expect that everything should work all the time, every time. And if it's broken, I want it fixed right now. And if you don't, I will write 10 more people, 10 more of these posts over the next day stating the exact same thing, but with a mixture of different insults thrown in. The other type is when SOE makes a decision on how something will be done. For example, the name thing in the mergers. You may not like it, but they made their decision, posting page after page on how they did it wrong and how it should be done, which, strangely enough, usually benefits the writer, is just making the information people are trying to get harder. On the top of the list of the ones that get under my skin are the ones that think that just because they were here since EQ started, they have more rights, more say, and deserve more consideration than a subscriber that has been playing for less time. We pay for access to the game. What SOE does after that is their call. We are lucky in that from what I've seen, they really care about what their players have to say. They want to make a great game. It only benefits them to do so. Oh yeah, and this may shock some, but yes, they are ultimately out to make money. Could say, oh, so much more on this, but moving on, as there are some responses to the last podcast I would like to make. Very good podcast, by the way. First off, what I'm thankful for game-related, of course, I guess it would have to be for the diehards like you two, the ones that have kept this game alive all these years, so I could come along and actually play the game. I guess I'm not so surprised by it, as it truly is a great game, and I have not seen any other game out there that is as good. Allie, I was so touched that you went to so much trouble to come up with an idea to make a floral arbor after my comment to Domino in the last email. It was very sweet of you. Now to let you in on something I may not know a lot or anything really about raids and a great deal of the instances, I have become well-versed in all house items in a very short time. There's rarely a time that I don't have Everseek and EQ decorators open while in-game. I've made it a goal on my main to gain access to all house items by either faction, shiny, or plunder. That being said, a tip. You don't need the 7 crafters to get the shinies for the floral arbor collection. You need 1 and 1 character slot open. Collect the shinies, make the tune, get the arbor, place it in house, delete tune. Rinse and repeat as many times as you wish. Once again, though, I was so touched you took the time you did on my behalf. And a little aside there, you are correct. You can do that. I didn't even think of that. Okay, now because once again, Dell has brought up his frugal nature, I have a little story. Okay, from time to time, I have been known to be a bit of a brat. So when I heard in a podcast Dell go on about how no one better undercut him on the market when the mergers happen, well, I could not resist. I created a tune on Unrest named Inda Buff with the sole intent of bringing her up and just undercutting Dell. Well, I got her made, went to town to see what kind of items Dell sells, and was stunned. There were lots of items listed that were selling for copper. Copper. Really? You're taking up bank box selling space to sell items for copper? There was not a lot to work with. No crafted items, just random stuff, most not worth anything, with the exception of some master spells that I assume were gotten raiding. So I had to give up on that prank. Here's a tip, Del. When you're hanging in-game and want something to do, take your 90 into the Shimmering Citadel. Just run around and pick up the shinies for a bit. You can get quite a few in a short time. Take these shinies, throw out the copper crap in your box, and put these in. They sell for way more, and I found sell very well. It takes no time and makes you a lot of money, so maybe you can be a sport and spring for an in-game mail and mail Allie her items. Cheap ass. One last comment, an idea maybe for the show that that would also be helpful, I think, to new players. Have a segment on things you wish you had known when you started playing. When you brought up the harvesting quest, this came to mind as I discovered that quest way late in the game and had to backtrack a ton. I know you don't profess to be experts on the game, but there's a lot of little things you learn along the way that you wish you knew way back when. I think this would be great tidbits of information for new players. I can't tell you how confused I got every time I went up to a mob and tried to decipher that what the triangles, borders, pointing up or pointing down, and so forth meant, or knowing that plant food had some real value in the marketplace. Once again, guys, enjoy the shows. I am, after all, still listening. By the way, hubby really enjoys them as well. He is always asking me if there's a new show up yet. My daughter, on the other hand, thinks we are even bigger nerds as we are listening to a podcast about a game now. Oh, well, can't please everyone. Signed, Indabuff. Well, thank you, Indabuff, for that fantastic letter. I especially love the section on Del's frugality. You give him a lot to work with there. I think excellent advice for Del, and perhaps we'll turn him into a real dwarf one day.
I can't do it anymore. I have held my tongue long enough. I cannot hold back. How dare she come on my server and attempt to undercut me? How dare she? First of all, even if you had the chutzpah to do such, I would just undercut you anyways again. It doesn't matter who you are, guildmate, friendmate, my own alts, I don't care, I undercut everybody. So bring it on into Undercutter. I invite you to come on. I think the hard part would actually be finding the copper crap that I do sell. I think that would be more of a challenge if you could actually get out in the world and find the same junk that I have that I'm selling. That would be a huge accomplishment. I've always said, and it's on our website, my little favorite saying is, all's fair in love, war, and broker pricing. The reason why I don't have any trade-skilled items up there is nobody buys trade-skilled weaponsmith items. I'm a weaponsmith. Everybody has far better weapons from either adventuring, raiding, or whatever, and there's no marketplace for trade-skilled weapons. So that's why I don't have any of that up there. The good stuff sells fast. The master that I did have was probably a level 30-some-odd from some chrono-mentoring zone I was in at the time. Trust me, it's not a top-end master. So, yeah, I sell junk. But I look at it this way. Every copper adds up. So, yes, I am selling stuff on the cheap, but it does add up.
But if you just made those, say, for example, you can make the temporary dormants that you make for me, you could sell those at a markup and make some pretty good change. And her suggestion about Shimmering Citadel is 1,000,000% right. My husband used to go around there every night and grab up the shinies and sell them.
I did too. I'll tell you, when I was farming Shimmering Citadel for shinies to finish out some of the collections that they had up there and some of the ones that they put in relatively recently with one of the game updates to backfill ones that were missing, I absolutely went up there and farmed the tar out of that place. I had bags of that stuff. I've certainly sold it down over time, again, by undercutting everybody else who was doing the same thing. So usually what I'm selling is junk I've encountered along the way. Yeah, some of it is junk, but it's just stuff I've encountered along the way. I could go up to Shimmering Citadel, but it's a little bit out of my way, and that sounds like too much work.
Out of your way? Don't you have the carpet that takes you there?
I do.
It's basically two clicks away.
I do, but to use that carpet, I would have to pay 15 gold.
To get in your house?
To get into my house.
Wow, you are so cheap.
I am so cheap.
15 gold to make an is a small investment to make, what, like 5 plant a night?
But there's nothing up there I need. So if I'm selling bird feet, it's because I was out mass slaughtering birds for the Destroyer title, or if I'm selling a Cyclops Eye, that's because I was out killing Cyclops Eyes. The things I'm selling are things I have encountered in my journeys. I usually don't go out of my way to harvest just so I have stuff to put on the broker. To me, the broker is a side effect of me being out there, not the reason I go out there. I don't go okay. out to broker stuff or to Fair gather enough. Stuff.
So basically, the answer is you're just really friggin' lazy.
I don't know. I mean, we could have a whole discussion of whether I'm more cheap or lazy, but that's a topic for another show, I guess.
I guess so.
Okay. One other comment I did want to say. It's great to hear that not only is Inda Buff a regular listener, we have now also hooked Inda Hubby into listening as well. And she came up with a great idea for us.
Yes.
To talk about some of the things that we wish we had known as we were growing up in EverQuest 2.
Yeah, that was an awesome suggestion. And I think we're going to run with it.
And do it right now, aren't we? Isn't that next on our agenda?
Yeah, I think we wanted to sort of make this a little segment occasionally.
So we entitled it, what, wish we, what did we?
What we wish we knew. What we wish we knew. Wow, that rolls right off the tongue. Maybe we need a new name.
Yeah, we'll work on that. So, Allie, what did you wish you knew, wished known?
Well, there aren't that many things that I wish I knew because I feel like I know a lot at the time. I think I can sort of put myself in the shoes of somebody else, but at the time, there was something I definitely did not know, and that was about poisons, because I actually almost quit the game over poisons, over DPS, actually, after, you know, I've told you this story before about dying on the beaches of Thundering Steps to down arrow crabs. Well, they weren't down arrow at the time, but... Anyway, poisons, very important. If you're a non-barred scout, you can use poisons. You can use three types of poisons, and you can run them simultaneously. So I wanted to give a quick recap of that in case people don't know. You can look up all the details, you know, somewhere else, but I just wanted to give a quick overview. There's damage poisons, which is a little red vial. And it's a red icon when you're using the poison. There are debuffs. That's a purple vial with a blue icon. And then there are special effect type poisons. That is a blue vial with a yellow icon, if that makes any sense. There's four types of each. And if you raid or if you group with any other non-barred scouts, you probably want to know that a lot of the poisons don't stack with each other, so you have to sort of coordinate so that you can maximize the benefits.
What I wish I knew when I was a young Templar, and as I've said, I have primarily played a Templar the whole way. In the beginning, Templars could not buff on the run. So every time we died, I would stand there and I would cast all my buffs, and then we would run. Or if people ran off, they would have to get buff later, and hopefully they didn't run into combat without their buffs. So one day I was playing the Troubadour as an experiment to learn about how to play a non-Templar class. And one day I had died and was rezzing. This was actually out in Netfarce, and I was running back, and I accidentally clicked one of my buff buttons, and it actually went on. And I was shocked. Honest to God, I did not know prior to, what, a year ago, that certain classes could buff on the run. That was completely foreign to me. Since then, things have obviously changed, and some classes can now buff on the run. There are still some that I have as a Templar that I can't cast on the run and have to do after I come to a stop. But I was always amazed that there were these little nuances between classes that I had never played and just were completely oblivious to them. And when I mentioned this to people, others were like, oh yeah, we've been able to do that since day one. So things I wish I knew, well, it's maybe a little bit dated now, but I always wish I knew that certain classes could buff on the run. And other classes were limited by that ability. It's certainly something now every time I see it, it sticks out to me more because I am more conscious of it.
Yeah, actually it's funny that you mentioned that because a long time ago, Rangers used to be able to use combat arts on the move. I'm pretty sure, I mean, it was a way long time ago, but they changed that. But you can auto attack. But you're talking about buffs, not you're not talking about damage spells or anything like that.
Right. I'm still, I have to say, whenever we group Allie, I'm still impressed that you can shoot your bow on the run.
Well, it's just auto attack.
Right. So we're running through some, you know, I don't know, butcher block mountains, and there's some kobolds that are gray over there that you know you can one shot. You can just pick those off on the run. I, as the Templar, either have to hit them and kill them in one shot on the run with my hammer. That ain't gonna happen. Or I have to nuke. That means I have to come to a stop to do that. I've always been impressed where, as I'm running along behind you, you're just, you know, pew-pew-pewing things as we run by them and they're dropping dead.
But they're gray, so that's why they drop dead. Or green.
I'm still impressed.
Okay. You need to roll a DPS class. I've said it before. I'll say it again. So, Del, back at the beginning of the show, I said I got mugged.
Yes, you did.
And I really meant it.
How so?
We have this little project that we're doing, as you know, the Mighty Mug Project. And just as a recap for folks who are not aware, a little bit about the inspiration for this project. At the 2010 fanfare, SOE had a silent auction. And one of the items in the auction that they had was a series of Mighty Mugs that were customized by various staff members. If you don't know what Mighty Mugs are, they're basically recycled plastic figures, like little with little bulbous heads and round bellies and basic arms and legs. Generally, you'll see them in the form of superheroes, movie characters, Yoda, things like that. And you can also get blank mugs. And there's this whole community of people who create their own custom Mighty Mugs. There are some really talented folks out there. After seeing the SOE mugs, I thought it was so awesome that it inspired me to pitch this idea to Dell for us to create our own custom mugs of each other. So Allie would make one of Dell, and Dell would make one of Allie. And the idea would be then to auction them off to listeners and donate the proceeds to Child's Play. A little bit about Child's Play. It's a Seattle-based gamer-run organization that holds an annual toy drive for children's hospitals throughout the world. And in 2008, their drive raised more than $1.4 million in toys and cash for 60 children's hospitals in the United States and around the world. Since 2003, Child's Play has raised more than $5 million. This is a really great organization. They're helping out hundreds of thousands of children, some of whom are in pretty bad shape. And on top of that, it's a way to show a different side of people who play video games as a hobby. I'm sure all of us have seen negative press about video games being a bad influence. And those of us who play games know that we're not bad people. So if you get a chance, check out their website. It's www.childsplaycharity.org. Take a few minutes to read some of the letters. There are some letters up there from current and former patients, parents of patients, siblings of patients. There's one from a kid whose brother was hospitalized. He talks about how video games was one of the few ways he connected with his brother. It's a really touching letter. So what we're doing is auctioning off these mugs we've created and donating the proceeds to Child's Play. So we wanted to talk a little bit today about how we created our mugs, what kind of challenges we ran into. Did you have some challenges, Del?
Oh, I had many, many a challenge. I think when we first pitched this idea and first talked about it on the podcast, I stated that I have little to zero artistic talent. And to decorate these mugs takes a certain amount of background or practice or experience in painting. I can paint a wall in a room, but that's very different from painting a mug. And a mighty mug, to say the least. So it has been a little bit of a uphill challenge for me. I can see what I want the mug to look like in my mind's eye, but translating that into my hand and into the paintbrush and onto the mug has been difficult. I have, throughout the course of it, had to make concessions with myself, saying it is not going to look like the ones that you see in the store or any of the ones that you see on some of these custom Mighty Mug websites. Dell, you don't have that level of talent. I started out begrudgingly on this, and I will say, Allie, I called you and your idea every dirty name in the book as I have been working on this. I cursed you up and down and thought, how did I ever let her convince me to do this?
And I did get a phone call from you, I believe, from the craft store, where you were telling me you were threatening my life. I'm going to kill you.
That is true. I was standing in the paint supply aisle at AC Moore and figuring, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. There is a row 40 feet long of painting supplies. I need to figure out what I'm doing here. So it has been a labor of love, if I can call it that. It has been less painful than maybe I have exaggerated it out to be. It's coming along. I certainly wish I had more talent, and I will say, not only in painting, I have zero artistic talent when it comes to music, drawing, creativity, or anything like that. So I am always impressed by those who can, because it is a skill and a talent that I do not have. So I am always amazed by what some of these folks out there can create, and I only wish I had the talent to do that. So when folks look at the Allie mug, the mug that Delmont has made, please bear in mind, it is what it is, and he's got the skills of a sixth grader when it comes to this sort of stuff. So be kind, but be generous. And as Allie said, we are doing this for charity, so I'm hoping that folks are receptive to that and understand where we're coming from in trying to do that or do this.
Yeah, I think I was expecting, when I bought the blank mug, I'm not sure what I was expecting. It's a little bigger than I thought it was. It's about six inches tall. Now, if you can imagine, well, maybe it's not even quite six. I don't know how big it is. Anyway, around 5 or 6 inches. If you can imagine big dwarf fingers with a little tiny paintbrush and this little 6-inch figurine trying to paint a straight line, you might feel a little sorry for the Delmon. I at least have smaller fingers, being a wood elf. Maybe a little easier to paint the little mug. You know, it is for charity, so hopefully people don't feel like they are purchasing an ugly doll, but more...
It's an action figure. It's not a doll.
Okay. Hopefully they feel more like they're doing good for sick children. And this is just a sort of a token of appreciation on behalf of EQ2Talk.
Now, Allie, you did share one experience while mugging that the Delmon mug, the one that you're doing, took a bit of a tumble.
At some point, I believe it was after I had painted the face and the base of the armor, he sort of fell over.
Now, when you say sort of fell over, what does that mean?
Well, you know, the mugs have a big bulbous head, and it's got these little feet. And if it's not balanced right, it'll just fall over. And I may have jostled him a little bit. So he plunked down on his face, but I fixed him. I painted the face again. And when I say the face, there's no actual features that I was painting at that point. It was just background. So hopefully you won't notice anything.
There is not a large dent in my head?
No. The paint seems to have taken care of. There was a dent in your leg prior to priming, even. The paint seems to have covered that right up. I did have a little problem with my base paint on the armor, and it had some white streaks in it, which was supposed to be gray. So I thought, well, I'll just flip his head around. And after I had painted the detail on the armor, I realized that I was painting the back. There is a front and back on the mug.
So I'm facing the wrong direction?
Well, let's just say your knees look a little funny.
Do I look bow-legged?
No, not quite bow-legged. You got a little bulbous back of the knee. And a little concave front of the knee. So hopefully it's not too bad. But they're almost identical front and back, just not quite. I did look on the SOE page, the recap of the fanfare silent auction, where they have that photo with all the mugs lined up there, looking really awesome. There is one of them that is backwards as well, but it actually kind of works for that particular mug. I don't remember which one it was, but it looks pretty awesome. My paint job is nowhere close to those, just so you know. Don't have high expectations here. But you can check out our finished mugs and a little description on our website. We should have a little tab up there entitled Mugs. I'm saying this before we actually have the page up, but this is our plan, is to have a link on there where you can bid. You can send an email to a special email address to send your bid to. And what we would like to do is post up the current bid on the website, and we'll also keep our Facebook page updated. So make sure you like us over there if you want to get regular updates on the bidding. Hopefully we can raise some money. So you can bid until midnight Pacific, December 31st, and keep an eye on the website or like us on Facebook for regular updates.
We'll also add a link on the mugs page to the Child's Play charity website. So if you don't even feel like bidding on the mugs, that's okay too. I do think it would be a great idea if folks donated to the charity as well, because I do think it is a very, very worthy charity, and as Allie was saying, I think helps break the stereotype that comes along with being a gamer.
One of the other things that I wanted to mention about Child's Play, there are a couple of things. If you want, you can go to their website and they have links to, they'll show you a map and you can actually select the hospital closest to you. And you can click on there, and they're working with Amazon. They have, the hospital staff has put together sort of a gift wish list. So you can actually purchase a specific item that hospital has requested because they need it or that's what they're looking for. Maybe they don't have a Wii console, but they've got a whole bunch of Wii games. You can actually buy them a Wii console, or you can buy them a Wii game on their wish list at a hospital near you or near someone that you'd like to gift for Frostfell, perhaps. It's a really good way to see the good that you're doing directly.
I will say this too. Last year for Frostfell, Allie, you did just that for me, didn't you? You purchased a video and donated it to the local children's hospital here in my name. And I always thought that was a fantastic gift. I was very honored to have my name attached to something like that. And I know that, you know, some kids over there were going to get a chance to watch a video, you know, during some of their difficult times in their lives. And I think that's wonderful. So often during the holiday season, we think of running to malls and running around, and we forget the folks who are less off than we are at times. So I think this is a good way because, again, we're gamers here. We're playing EverQuest 2. It's about a game. It's about having fun. So tying into that gaming process that we're all involved in and bringing games to folks who could really use some this time of year.
And it's not just the kids that are hospitalized. It's their brothers and sisters, too, who maybe are well, but they're kind of stuck in the hospital because the entire family is there. It gives the siblings something to do also. Maybe they're stuck around the holidays, and it just brings a little bit of joy to kids who are not doing so well.
Yeah, I remember there was an article or a letter that someone had written up there talking about how their sibling was sick, and being so young at the time, didn't necessarily understand why mommy and daddy always were at the hospital or why he always had to go to the hospital too. And having those games, it's an outlet for those kids who are trapped in that situation where they might not be the ones who are ill, but they are drawn into it, and they're too almost too young to understand why it's important. And these toys and games, they add a distraction and help them get through those difficult times. So it's not only, as you say, Ellie, the kids who are sick, but also their immediate family and friends as well who come to visit them.
Yeah.
So hopefully folks will take a look at our mugs, be impressed with what we've created. Don't laugh, please. And bear with us and make a donation, either bid on the mug so we can raise some money, or make your own donation to the Child's Play charity as well. Either way, it's all going to a good cause. Episode 12 brings us something else as well. It brings us another edition of the Allie Angle. So, Allie, are you ready for this week's Allie Angle question?
I certainly am.
Alrighty. And again, it is a little Mighty Mug themed. So, Allie, the Mug Project has been a labor of love. That is to say, while doing it, it might have been unfun and a bit difficult at times. But now that you're done, you can sit back and smile and enjoy your accomplishment. What are three EverQuest 2 labors of love that you've done?
Well, this was, I thought, a really great question, because there are so many things in game that I think everybody's encountered something that is seemingly insurmountable, and it's frustrating at times where you just want to tear your hair out, but you don't give up. So it was tough to narrow it down, but I picked three of the things to me that were the most frustrating with the biggest payoff. So the number three for me is getting my mythical weapon. It's totally passe at this point, but at the time, it was endgame. By the time I hit 80 and was ready to start my epic, there were already people buying updates for some ridiculous amount of plat. Something like 500 plat was the average price to play for a myth update. I did not want to do that. I wanted to earn it all the way to the end myself. I assumed that I'd never get it, but I worked really hard. I stuck with it, and I had a lot of great friends who stuck with it along with me who were also getting updates for themselves. And I got every single kill on my own effort. I did not pay one copper. I did not tag along on a single outside raid. I didn't even do a pickup. I got every update with my own guild or with the alliance that I was running with at the time. That felt like a huge accomplishment for me, even though I was one of the last regular players in my guild to get the mythical, and because Rangers got the short end of the stick with the raid mobs we needed, it felt great to have it done the right way. How many times we worked on Druushk, then working on Nexona, repeating over and over again, just tearing our hair out, working on Veneral Sathir. Sometimes it just seemed like it was just never going to happen. Nowadays, looking back at Nexona or Veneral Sathir, everything seems just like a cakewalk. But at the time, it was tough going. It was a lot of hard work, and I'm really, really happy that I did it. So number three was getting my mythical weapon.
Now, you said, too, the Rangers had a difficult time with the mobs that they had. Do you think, though, that adds a little bit more of an extra smile moment for you, saying, mine were hard, but they were well worth it?
Absolutely. The last mob that I needed was Faradar, which, as you know, is the end, one of the last mobs in the zone. And I think to this day, I've still only killed Faradar like four times ever. And I've been raiding three, four, even five times a week sometimes for 4 years, and I've only killed Faradar four times.
I agree. I think the classes that used Faradar should have a little bit of a badge of honor, because they had to wait till the very end to get their updates.
Exactly. And Veneral Sathir, I did that before they nerfed it. That was a huge moment for me. Just Veneral Sathir alone, that was one of my Mayong moments, as you like to call it.
Yes, and Mayong is just that. He was a labor of love, looking back.
So my number two was completing, this is maybe a little obscure for people, completing the Chardok quest series. They're actually not in Charduk, in your journal, the quest series is under Kylung Plains. It's a series from the Gwalnax Brigade. I think that's how you pronounce it, Gwalnax, the Dizok out there in Kylung Plains. This was one rough series of quests. At the time, Charduk was a pretty old school zone. Just traveling alone was old school. You had to earn access to the bird. You had to get keys for various gates. You had to travel in a group because everything aggroed, and there were roamers everywhere, packs of roamers, mobs dropping from cliffs, all kinds of crazy stuff going on in there. Then the quests themselves were old school. You had quests that would give you an update from the named only, not the placeholder. So sometimes you'd have to camp a room for hours on end just to get one update. And then that update would only update one person in the group, not everyone. So then you had to camp another night and hours at a time just to get that one update before you could progress to the next quest. You know, really old school way of doing things. These quests then had you running back and forth between Charduk and the Gwalnax Tower out in Kylung Plains, only to be sent back into Charduk, this time even deeper, maybe through a different gate. So that one was rough going, and it just seemed to go on forever, and we were cursing the names of the devs that created this thing. But in the end, it was a huge accomplishment to get that done. It felt really good.
I absolutely remember the Charduk quest lines. We did them together, and we did them with some other folks. We actually did them kind of twice, didn't we? Because we had a few folks miss out on some of the updates, so we had to go back and get them again.
But yeah, and it became our motto, never leave anyone behind. You know, you don't want anyone to get behind on a quest, because guess what? You're just going to end up having to do it over again.
Right, and Charduk is really the exception in very old school EverQuest 1 style, where not every kill, as you say, updates, and not every kill even drops what you need. So it was quite the challenge. I do remember, but I think, again, what may have made it even a little bit more of a labor of love for us is that we did it all together.
Yeah.
And we stuck it out as a group, and we did manage to finish it. You are absolutely right. I think that's a great one. And it's something that not everybody out there has done, because not a lot of people have the wherewithal to hang in there as the way we did to get some of that content done.
Yeah, and ironically, we did it after there was already more content later. By the time we got around to starting it, it was already sort of passe for people in-game.
I think a lot of people went in there, got what they needed, and got out. We went back and forth to complete all those quests. And looking back, I'm proud of our accomplishment.
I am too. There was quite a time investment there.
Yes. Maybe not at the time we were proud of it, but looking back, we are.
Yeah. So my number one labor of love is leveling the guild. Way back in 2004 and 2005, when my guild was small and low level, we discovered that you could level the guild by doing writs. This was even before we figured out that doing heritage quests garnered a hell of a lot more guild experience, but we figured out you could get guild XP from doing writs. I used to run these patron groups out. I'm sure you remember the patron system. And basically, we'd get a bunch of alts together and grind these low-level writs for badgers and wolves. I used to run those two writs over and over and over again. I level-locked a character at 12 so that I could get both. Someone actually later told me you could level-lock a little higher than that and make it a little easier. But in any case, I actually made a bunch of other people level-lock, so they could run those writs with me over and over and over again. And when I say over and over again, I mean hundreds and hundreds of times, killing badgers and wolves. Back to town, turn in, get new quests, run back out, badgers, wolves, badgers, wolves. This was back when you could de-level the guild if a patron who had racked up a ton of guild status points left the guild. You could actually lose guild level when that person left. So you had to be really careful about who you made a patron and who you trusted with those guild status points. But I remember hitting guild level 5. Man, that was a really cool achievement, because at that time, your guild tag was displayed under your name. And when they brought guild cloaks into the game, we had a long, drawn-out discussion on the forums and voted about what our guild heraldry would look like. I don't remember what guild level that turned out to be, but I remember getting the cloak. That was an awesome day, and getting the last piece of trim on the cloak that we had designed as a group. Not too many guilds out there at the time had all the parts of the cloak. And so it was really proud for, you know, us to run around with our cloaks and our guild tags. So I kind of miss guild leveling. It was a real team effort, people working together for a common goal.
You're right. And there was a lot of work that required that. Do you think, though, over time that's become less labor of a love, and because there's less labor involved, and therefore maybe cheapens that work?
It is less labor involved. We leveled from 80 to 90 after the expansion came out. We were actually the first guild on Unrest to level to 90, and we were really proud of that fact. It was just as fun, I think, because we were a team making a team effort towards a common goal, and it became a little bit of a challenge against like a competition almost against each other, who can do the most writs, or, you know, who can rack up the most, who can find the most ingenious way to rack up guild status points. It is easier to level, but it's still just as fun.
Yeah, and I think what you say, you add that component, the why it's a labor of love, not just labor, is because you're working together as a team. And I think that's what makes it lovable, if you want to use that term right there, is that it's a team effort, as you say, and you're all working together to that common goal, that final result. And with a little bit of competition with other people nipping at your heels to keep you motivated to keep working extra hard. Back in the day, we had the risk of losing it if somebody decided to leave the guild or move on or stop playing or something like that, or delete that tune. There was a risk of losing. We don't have that risk anymore today. But it certainly kept you motivated to keep moving forward and make sure you were doing it the best way you could. There was a lot of research, like you say, about level locking and what were the best writs that were easily doable, that gave you the best bang for the buck in terms of status points and all that. So there was a certain amount of work in the past. It seems now today, at least with our guilds, when we're raiding, we're just racking up so much so quickly while raiding. You get 24 people on a kill, and they're all getting the updates, or you're getting status from mobs at the ends of instances. Status seems to be coming in so much more easier than it did back in the day.
Yeah, and at the time, we weren't raiding at all. I mean, there was no raiding for us. I mean, we were just basically, everybody was doing group things. And, you know, we didn't even know about heritage quests giving you a lot more guild XP. Somebody figured that out, and then we abandoned the writs. But, man, those writs were fun. Grizzled Badgers. I'll never forget those names.
Yeah, I think the initial push to level 50, I think it was 50 was the initial guild cap, wasn't it? That made it so much more exciting because it was so much harder to get to than it is necessary by today's standards, with today's gameplay and the way it operates and works today. So that's a good one. It's a little old school, I think, but it is a good one.
Yeah, I think some of the best stuff is old school. There's so many, like I said, there's so many great things. I have so many great memories that just didn't make the cut. But, you know, maybe someday I can bore you with those stories.
Maybe we'll have to enhance the alley angle someday to have the honorable mention category. So to recap, the number 3 was?
Getting my mythical weapon.
Number 2 was?
Completing the Charduk quest series.
And the number 1, labor of love for EverQuest 2 for you, Allie?
Leveling my guild to level 5.
One thing we wanted to mention as well is that episode number 13, our next episode, will be our Frostfell wish list episode, where we will be talking about some of the things that are on our wish list for EverQuest 2. So we would like to invite folks who are listening to send us their Frostfell wish lists, their things that they would like to see in-game, and we're going to add those along with our lists and send them off to SOE, and we might even comment on them as well during our next episode. So you can drop those in email to Allie and I, and we will add them to our agenda for our next episode, the Frostfell Show. So I think that wraps up this episode 12 of EQ2 Talk. Thank you to everyone who downloaded and listened to the podcast. We certainly hope that you enjoyed it. Let's also say thank you to our corporate sponsor this week, Hasbro, makers of My Little Pony. Hasbro, making the world smile. If you have any suggestions, comments, feedback, want to talk about any of the things that we've been talking about, if you have some suggestions for what you think are labors of love in EverQuest 2, you can reach out to us via email. So for me, that's delmon@eq2talk.com.
And I'm Allie@eq2talk.com.
And if you want to check with us in-game, so for me, that's eq2.unrest.delmon. And let me just spell it out. It's D-E-L-L-M-O-N.
And you can reach me at eq2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And don't forget to check us out on Facebook as well under our character names and EQ2 Talk. We appreciate all the folks who have liked us thus far and hope that many more continue to join us on Facebook as well.
Yeah, last time we recorded, Del, you had 22 friends and I had 38. And you insisted you had to have more friends than me. Well, guess what? As of last night, Del has 46 and Allie has only 43. Including dogs and stuffed bears.
So to that increase of 20 friends, your checks are in the mail.
Well, I'm starting to see the writing on the wall here. Do I need to be worried? Maybe on the next show, are you going to be auditioning for a new co-host, one with more friends?
No.
Sadly, though, there is a huge disparity in the number of people who like EQ2 Talk and how many friends we have. Does this mean that our friends don't like us?
Maybe they are our friends, but they don't like the podcast. I don't know.
That's a really horrible thought.
And we should also remind folks to check out the EQ2Talk.com website and check out the new page, the mugs page, where they'll see photos of our mugs and have an opportunity to bid on them. And we do hope that they bid early and bid often and bid high.
Yes, because the money is going directly to Child's Play. And you can check out the Child's Play website at childsplaycharity.org.
Have a great day, everyone, and say goodnight, Allie.
Goodnight, Allie.